So can you tell me about where we're at and what we're looking at? We're standing on this bridge over, it's not the River Kwai.
I think we're in the zone that was in Tarkovsky's film, Stalker. This zone was this area in the future, this kind of post-apocalyptic area where the aliens had touched down. Anyway, you know, this is the old, I think this is the old I&M Canal, Illinois and Michigan Canal. And it's amazingly straight, and it's all overgrown and frowsy on the edges, so the edges are very soft, but the canal itself is very straight. And on the, which direction do you think that is?
That's south.
To the south, there is a big refinery, so there's a tall chimney in view that's belching flame, and other chimneys are belching gorgeous white cumulus clouds. And then over here, I'm not sure what we're going to see, but the oddest thing about it is that there's a couple of houses and lawns, mowed lawns, down here under this huge highway bridge next to the old canal. And it's like an area where you would think people go to dump bodies or hazardous waste or something. But there's this, you know, remarkably groomed, manicured lawns. And I guess it's just two houses. No, there's a third. Well, there's the Centennial Trail, the I&M Canal Trail. And this part of it's called the Centennial, and it's a bike trail. Let's go look at the sign.
Trail rules, motorized vehicles are prohibited, yet, let's see, pets must be leashed. Stay on designated trail. Pass on the left.
Oh, it says temporary closed, but it's but the gate's open. So, here we go.
So how do we read that?
Well, I read it as an invitation.
And there's somebody else.
And there's a bicyclist right there, which I will not call a biker. And we have Dan Wong here. We're going to read the interpretive signs.
Oh, would you read for it the for trail. Anybody who's listening?
Well, it's, it says a path of productivity to a link of leisure. In the early 1800s, marshy prairie rivers were too shallow for boats. To overcome this obstacle, the state of Illinois built the I&M Canal. This man-made channel provided a water connection between Lake Michigan and the Illinois River, linking the East Coast to the Gulf of Mexico. This is where the interest comes in. When the canal opened in 1848, the great wealth of the region's resources could finally be transported to markets located far away. Though only 6 feet deep and 60 feet wide, which, what do you think that is now? Like 20? No.
No, that's 60 feet wide.
That's 60 feet wide?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Then don't ask me to judge distances. The canal brought people, commodities, and prosperity to the region. The canal made it possible to ship crops of wheat, corn, and barley, and heavy goods such as coal, iron, and limestone needed to manufacture steel. As the superhighway of the Midwest, it was also responsible for the region's population growth. Within the first decade of canal operation, Chicago's population grew from 20,000 to well over 100,000. Now here's the link of leisure part. By the late 1850s, railroads dominated the transportation scene, and in 1933, the I&M Canal was superseded by the much larger Illinois Waterway. Today, the canal continues to connect the communities along its route. Canal trails serve as a recreational link for bikers, hikers, walkers, and runners. Look carefully, since this portion of the canal was undeveloped, it is one of the best-preserved sections of the original I&M Canal.
So the first technology put itself out of business by bringing in the means to build the railroads, which superseded them.
Yep, in a relatively short time,
right.
Actually, you know.
Before the capital was cold.
I think, though, in the meantime, there were a lot of people who made out like bandits. Like the guy who developed property along Archer Road that still goes from Lockport to Chicago. So this looks like we have a lot of... What are we looking at here? Is that Ailanthus?
I'm not sure.
Tree of Life?
Tree of...
Rose of Sharon?
Rose of Sharon?
No, it doesn't. It looks like Tree of Life, they call it, which grows all over the city like a... It spreads, it grows fast.
But this looks like some of the diggings from the canal piled up here. As a berm, perhaps like a dike. Dike in case this flooded.
But don't you think...
This would have been dug out from the canal.
But all those stones, you think dug out from the canal?
I think so.
Well, look at this. Look at the size. They're actually stone walls along the side. So maybe they had to dynamite it or something. Maybe it was rock.
Well, it's limestone, and they dug into it. According to Brian, they had difficulty breaking it up and removing it.
Right, that's what I was wondering, if they used dynamite.
This preceded dynamite.
Right? Oh.
So 1870s?
I thought the Chinese invented it.
Dynamite?
Yeah.
Nobel.
Oh, okay.
He took nitroglycerin and added some stabilizing agents so that nitroglycerin, which was very unstable.
Mm-hmm. You should point that at you.
A selfie? Are you... Oh, well, I'll tell you what that... And then it could be used industrially safely. Nitroglycerin is subject to detonation by physical
shaking.
Shock.
Yeah, right.
And so whatever it was he added to it, stabilized it, and allowed it to be transported safely to where it would be utilized.
With a spark.
No, they would, they would ignite like an industrial firecracker.
Yeah.
In it, yeah.
But they would have to, make a spark.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like with the, this kind of thing you light your stove with.
A blasting cap.
Or like a...
A fuse.
Yeah, exactly. Blasting cap. Yeah, I don't know. I can look it up.
So what is your contribution to the project in examining corridors, passageways, the transportation of a commodity, of material, of identity, of personality, that kind of...
Well, I just think, for instance, I've studied the corporate food system for a long time, the global food system, and I think it is both interesting, pleasurable, and it's the basis for an ethical life to kind of know how your life is sustained, right? So to know how do all the things I use, including the food I eat, how does it get to me? Where does it come from? How many hands along the way are involved in these corridors of these passages of goods. And I think there's this whole world of infrastructure that people are oblivious to. I mean, you pass these things, you pass railroad tracks and, the container trucks pass you, the tractor trailers, and you don't know anything about their whole, or I didn't until I started really researching it. And then there's this whole intersection of energy corridors and circuits. So right now we're standing here looking at piles of coal Is this a refinery?
No, it's a
power plant.
Electrical generating station.
Yes, hence all these wires coming out of it and towers. But this is amazing. It's a Friday, and there's these yellow bulldozers driving around on top of these hills of coal. And I don't know what they're trying to do.
Well,
but
that's a different kind of food.
Food. Well, it's a different part
food
of our sustenance.
Boiler.
Yeah.
It's carbon. Our food is made of carbon. That's a different kind of carbon. They even think of it as food. They feed the boiler.
That's true. That's true. You feed a fire. Or you don't.
And it's all about energy. Our food provides us the energy of life, right?
That's right. Calories.
Right.
Right. But the, one of the problems with the industrial food system is we spend, say, take corn. We spend up to 7 calories.
More.
To grow 1 calorie of food energy. Like, so 7 calories in, 1 calorie out. And, or as saying, it's 10. This is perverse. This is like totally insane because the sun is really what powers food. It's a source that we are too much ignoring. I mean, like the way we grow food, like if we took care of the soil, we wouldn't need all those pesticides and artificial fertilizers and herbicides. If we actually took care of what we were doing and actually studied ecosystems and soil microbiology. But instead, we have this situation where the plants are kind of like drug addicts. They depend on these artificial inputs because the soil that they grow in doesn't really sustain them. It just anchors the roots. It's kind of merely physical.
The natural system has been turned into an industrial processing plant.
That's right. That's why we call it factory farming. Same logic.
It's not allowed to regenerate the nutrients through the natural process. Food and agriculture and the science of plant biology and soil nutrients and microorganisms, they have been studied. They are known, and they could be applied to a more eco-friendly.
Well, they could be, but actually the soil is something we've only begun to study. And it's, I mean, I was reading this special issue of the journal Science. It was just like 2004 or something. And they were saying, they were quoting Leonardo da Vinci as saying, we know more about the heavens above than the soil underfoot. And they were saying, well, it's pretty much still like that. And that was 2004. So, you know, 1,000 years almost after Leonardo, not 1,000. But.
And the same can be said about the oceans. They are studying them at the point where they're about to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And become large dead zones.
Yeah, and that's also related to the overuse of artificial fertilizer. See, if you want to keep nitrogen in your soil, the best way to keep it in the soil is in the bodies of microorganisms. And they have these secretions that stick them together into particles, into roots, so that when the rain comes, they don't wash out and you still have the nutrients. But artificial fertilizer has nothing to keep it in the soil, and it'll wash down the watersheds into the rivers and ultimately to, like, for instance, the Gulf of Mexico, where we have a dead zone the size of New Jersey.
Which some people think it's
great.
A dead zone also.
It is.
A bottle of water?
No, not empty one.
Oh.
A bottle of water?
My bottle has tea in it, and I don't want to empty my tea.
What would you like an empty container for?
He wants to take some sample water.
Well, maybe we can find one.